Good morning, brothers and sisters. Good morning, friends and neighbors. Good morning to the people running from the ape wolves. Good morning from the Owl King. Good morning from the All-Seeing Eye. Good morning from Mount Olympus. All the lowercase gods are screaming now. That's right. If it's a lowercase g, it's screaming. Of course, there is only one God, but I have no doubt that many fallen angels came to Earth not so long ago. When Lucifer led his rebellion against the Lord in heaven. And they landed in whatever shithole corner of this world they landed in. It wasn't Eden, buddy. And they called themselves God. I am Grogon. I am the Dragon King. My name is Zeus. I am in charge. My name is Mars. I'll give you weapons. My name is Dagon. Toss another baby in the oven, baby. Yeah. Right after the fall. Right after the fall of man and right after the fall of Lucifer, a whole bunch of angels fell to earth because they chose to side with the devil. And I kind of get it in a way. I sort of do. Pretty much anyone who's ever had a parent understands rebellion. But at the same time, there are different kinds of rebellion, and there are different kinds of love. Not that I want to spend the whole podcast on that, but it is June the 13th, Monday, 2022, Bob Limp Talk, right around 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. If you're someplace else counting your Bitcoin, good luck with that, buddy. You're counting them. You're counting your chickens. You're counting your hatches. Here is an article from Zero Hedge, and it was published this morning at around 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Mashinsky moment, Celsius pauses all withdrawals. Oh. This was submitted by, quote, The Raven, who I've followed this guy on Twitter before I've been banned from Twitter, but quote, The Raven, Fringe Finance, and it, again, published to Zero Hedge this morning, and I read on. Most people know I have been extremely critical of Celsius CEO Alex Mashinsky ever since he participated in a gold versus crypto debate with Peter Schiff, where he rattled off one alarming statement after the next. Tonight, it looks as though Celsius has delivered the ultimate piece of bad news for its clients, that they can no longer withdraw their funds. Oh boy. Celsius wrote this morning in a memo to the Celsius community, due to the extreme market conditions, today we are announcing that Celsius is pausing all withdrawals, swap, and transfers between accounts. We are not taking this action today to put Celsius in a better position to honor. We are taking this action today, to put Celsius in a better position to honor over time its withdrawal obligations. The post continued, I'm gonna drink a little coffee here. The post continued, acting in the interest of our community is our top priority. In service of that commitment and to adhere to our risk management framework, we've activated a clause in our terms of use that will allow for this process to take place. Celsius has valuable assets, and we are working diligently to meet our obligations. The company said it is taking the action to, and I quote, stabilize liquidity and operations. We are taking this necessary action for the benefit of our entire community in order to stabilize liquidity and operations while we take steps to preserve and protect assets. Furthermore, customers will continue to accrue rewards during the pause in line with our commitment to our customers. Well, that sounds nice. We understand that this news is difficult, but we believe that our decision to pause withdrawal, swaps, and transfers between accounts is the most responsible action we can take to protect our community. We are working with a singular focus to protect and preserve assets to meet our obligations to customers. Our ultimate objective is stabilizing liquidity and restoring withdrawals, swap, and transfers between accounts as quickly as possible. There is a lot of work ahead as we consider various options. This process will take time, and there may be delays. Oh, boy. Just days ago, I was on with Palisades Gold Radio last week and reiterated my skepticism of Mashinsky and these types of crypto claims. There is shady shit going on in the world crypto. There are Ponzi schemes on top of Ponzi schemes on top of Ponzi schemes. And you don't need to know dick about crypto. All you need to understand is you have several entities willing to pay people yield on their crypto assets that they deposit. Then you have to understand crypto doesn't inherently generate a yield. There are some very big, huge, massive air pockets in the world of crypto. I continued, until I see someone like Alex Mashinsky, who has made, in my opinion, a number of very irresponsible claims about gold, until a guy like that and his company get a comeuppance, I'm not interested in looking at the crypto space. And again, it was just about 6 months ago when I wrote an article about some of the absolutely batshit insane statements made by Mashinsky while debating Peter Schiff on the merits of crypto versus gold. That article was called Bitcoin, One Hubris-Laden Interview Closer to the Day of Reckoning. And it wasn't even a piece I intended on writing. It was only after I listened to Mashinsky's arguments for crypto during the debate that I felt the need to write it, mainly because I was seriously alarmed by the ease with which Mashinsky appeared to be spreading what I believed to be harmful information to the most susceptible, unsophisticated potential investors. From my November 2021 criticism of Mashinsky, Mashinsky led the debate by suggesting a classic fallacy, that Bitcoin's past performance was going to always be indicative of its future results. This is akin to betting black at the roulette table after red comes out 50 times in a row because it's due to come out when, in fact, black still has the same 50% chance of coming out as it did on all prior spins. I gave kudos to the Kitco moderator for trying to put a stop to this argument before it started, but this is always the first arrow in the quiver for Bitcoin bulls. I have pointed out over and over, there is a reason that the first disclaimer you always see when buying a financial product is past performance is not indicative of future results. Mashinsky then continues hopping from one logical fallacy and inaccuracy to the next. During a discussion about whether or not all Bitcoin margin debt, keyword all, was liquidated during the last Bitcoin crash, Peter Schiff points out that the amount of leverage people are using to buy Bitcoin is likely still significant and dangerous. Mashinsky argues that he believes all margin debt had been liquidated during the last Bitcoin plunge, a ridiculous assertion that had Peter fuming. The absolute worst and most irresponsible of all the arguments from Mashinsky came when he suggested to viewers of the debate, many of whom likely lack financial sophistication, that both Bitcoin and gold pay a yield. Of course, what he meant was that they pay a yield on his Celsius platform, but he failed to qualify his statements to make that clear. Neither asset pays a yield in general, and Mashinsky knows that. Days ago, Mashinsky blamed short sellers for the plunge in Celsius, which should have been the tell. And I quote, the CEO of crypto lending and staking platform Celsius, Alex Mashinsky, believes the sharks of Wall Street can smell blood in the water and are causing instability at several crypto projects. Mashinsky attributes recent Celsius price falls, the brief Tether depegging, and the collapse of Terra, at least in part, to short sellers on Wall Street, Cointelegraph wrote. This is not coincidence. This is somebody who decided, you know what, I'm going to take down all of Celsius, he said during the event. Recall just days ago also discussing Terra Luna's collapse. Now read Bitcoin 1, blah, 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 and that's the list and that's the article. Zero Hedge, if you go there today, it's still on the first page, I think. And it's in the notes. I want you guys to put on your time helmet. I want you to go back to those first years after the great financial crash. You know, the GFC, whatever the fuck they call it. And as we all know, the Federal Reserve under Bernanke swore to do whatever it took, and he did. He threw everything at it. He threw a golden shower at the problem. He took a lot of bad debt. He enabled a lot of bad finance. Corporations started borrowing money to buy their own stock. You could have seen what would happen next, right? By 2010, 2011, it looked like precious metals were going to break out. And silver was the real concern. And why was it a concern? Because silver goes into a lot of critical electronic infrastructure, especially if you're the deep state, especially if you're the government. If you want to spy on people, you need a lot of precious metals, you need a shit ton of silver. So the last thing you want is the price of silver to spike. The last thing you want is an uncontrolled input into your smart devices, your switches, your cameras, your control grid. You don't want that. You also don't want the dollar to collapse. And so I think round about 2008, 2009, whoever makes these decisions went into their stack of plans and they came across Plan 9 from outer space. Reanimate corpses as zombies. They said no. So they went to Plan 10 from outer space and get people suckered into a kind of generalized mindfuck, a big multi-user dungeon called crypto. And for years and years and years, people have been talking about this guy, Satoshi, who published this paper in 2009. I've read it. I've read the Ethereum paper. I even wrote my own fucking paper in 2017. And the only reason why I even dabbled into crypto, which I will get to in a moment, was kind of related to the situation in the world of liberty. But let's just table that for a second. I was watching Max Keiser back in 2011, 2012. And one of the things that occurred to me was that I thought, okay, buy silver, crash JP Morgan. It seemed on one level a little bit crazy, but on another level, it kind of seemed brilliant. And Max kept pushing that, and he kept pushing it until about 2012, and you tell me when, you tell me which week, sometime in 2012, maybe 2013, it became the Max Keiser Crypto Show. Every week, every day was about crypto, talking about crypto, how crypto is going to save you. It almost seems like somebody took Max for a little walk and pointed a gun at his head. I don't know that that's what happened. It could be he's just getting paid, and he's getting paid to spout bullshit. And maybe he was serious about the buy silver, crash JP Morgan. Maybe that was bullshit too, brothers and sisters. But what I can tell you, starting in 2013, definitely, it seems like the Max Keiser Show became the Max Keiser Crypto Show. Now, what does crypto do? Okay, crypto does a few things. It creates a kind of Keynesian economic, almost like a sub-economy that is driven by a kind of Keynesian economics. It basically creates a demand for resources in a certain sector that would have never have occurred. It creates artificial demand and artificial incentives for doing work that is pointless. You could even call it the systematization or the systematic implementation of broken windows. You know, the broken windows fallacy, the idea that you can destroy things, and by destroying things, you can create jobs. People have work. In many ways, crypto has become the broken windows fallacy made real. And you won't convince anybody of that. You won't convince them that it's not just that the value of your crypto is zero. It's way fucking worse than that. It's that you have been participating in the destruction of resources for no purpose, including your own time and energy. You have in fact been spending resources on something that was never going to be worth anything other than a waste of time. That is basically where I've been at with crypto pretty much since the beginning. In 2013, I think it was right around my divorce, I went to a meetup in Seattle, a crypto meetup, and they were all bragging, I'm setting up a rig and I'm mining lots of crypto, making money off of crypto. And one of these dudes said, you know, if you don't get in now, you'll never get in. And I said, that's pretty much what every grifter always says. I said that at the table and they all looked at me like with these dead eyes. And then I asked the question, do any of you guys know what complexity is? Because if you study computer science, you could argue that the subject of complexity is one of the most important topics you will ever discuss. And what is complexity? Complexity is the mathematical description of the cost of solving a problem in terms of the number of items or issues that must be solved. In essence, it's the mathematical function that describes how good the solution is. For example, if you have a list of items you need to sort, the most naive sorting algorithm is the bubble sort. And the bubble sort is easy to implement, but it has a complexity of n squared, which means that all things being equal, and you have a perfectly randomized disordered list, if there's 100 items in that list, then it's 100 squared steps. 100 times 100 steps to solve it. And that's bad. But actually, complexity can get much worse. It can become non-deterministic and polynomial. And in some cases, the only functions that describe that are factorial functions or worse. So something like the traveling salesman problem has an n factorial complexity, which, you know, isn't great. You know, factorial means if it's, you know, 5 factorial, it's 1 times 2 times 3 times 4 times 5. If it's 1,000,000 factorial, think about it. If it's, you know, in terms of computers, 20 years ago, solving the traveling salesman problem using standard algorithms for 1,000 cities in an abstract map was considered a very difficult situation. Anything above 1,000 cities was considered impossible. So complexity is critical. If you want to know whether or not a solution is any good, complexity is related to that. Complexity can be the difference between a web page refreshing instantly or a web page refreshing after 3 minutes. Complexity can be the difference between a mobile phone being able to last for a whole month off of one charge or, in reality, with all the deep state garbage on your mobile phone, only barely lasting a couple days, your smart device. Complexity uses up energy and resources, and all things being equal, As an engineer, and I don't care if you're a computer scientist or someone that builds buildings or airplanes, All things being equal, as an engineer, you want to reduce complexity. You don't want to increase it, because every time you increase complexity, you also increase the likelihood of failure. This is a well-known mathematical principle related to something called the Poisson curve. It's mechanical failure. Given enough time, given enough complexity, everything fails. And the more complex it is, the faster it's going to fail. The last decade of crypto bullshit has kept a lot of smart people busy. And busy doing nothing. Busy doing something that was never going to turn out to be anything. Now, don't get me wrong. With any grift, with any con, with any kind of bullshit, there are people that make money because they cash out at the right time. And if you ask me, the last few weeks, I think there have been a lot of people, and I don't mean the whales. The whales probably have guns to their heads. I mean a lot of low-level freaks have been cashing out of this deep state bullshit. And so people with half a coin, maybe even a whole coin here or there, people with that, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 that they can't afford to lose have been leaving, exiting, getting the fuck out of Dodge. My guess is the people that could do it 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, people who could do it back in 2021, a year ago, would have been doing it, getting out as best they can, hoping that there's a greater fool or maybe a million greater fools to make it look okay so that it isn't obvious that the escape is happening. So if you go to me and say, Dan, I went into crypto in 2009. I made a bobillion dollars. I got out in 2021. I'm not going to say God bless. You participated in something that is a crooked, crooked thing. I don't want a law against it. I just don't want people to be douchebag pieces of shit. And it turns out there is no law you can pass to prevent that. Did you know that, brothers and sisters? That no amount of government prevents people from being fucking assholes, especially if the incentives point towards dick. So what did crypto do in the last decade? It created a kind of Keynesian broken windows economic engine, which means it chewed up computers and processors. It protected precious metals, you know, which is great for the grifters on Wall Street and at the Federal Reserve. And it kept a lot of smart people tied up in bullshit, people who could have been doing interesting things that might have actually helped, that might have actually contributed to a future. But instead, they were focused on something that was total nonsense. And if you were one of the motherfuckers, as I said, who knew this was bullshit to begin with and made a bunch of money and got out, I'm not going to say God bless. I'll say fuck you. You know, if there's any justice in this fallen, crooked world, hopefully you get eaten by coyotes soon. But at the end of the day, I don't give a fuck. It's like some motherfucker telling me about all the money they made flipping houses. I don't care. You participated in evil, and you want me to say congratulations? No. No. I might read a few passages from the book of Revelation, but I'm not going to say good job, Babylon. I'm not going to do that. Crypto is polycentric. Now, what does that mean? It means it's not centralized. In fact, in some ways, it is the absolute polar opposite of centralized, of decentralized. Polycentric means you have a replicated ledger system, okay? It means that you just don't have one clearinghouse that is the same. You have as many clearinghouses in your network or nodes or miners that have to be synchronized. Every version of the blockchain on every node needs to be the same. It's one of the reasons why it's so fucking slow. If you've ever worked in database replication, you can understand how difficult that is in the basic sense. But when you're thinking about ledger replication with verification, it gets a lot more complex. Now, again, if your purpose is to have a forever ledger that doesn't have one place or one point of failure, that's fine. You can say it's distributed. Distributed is okay. It's okay to say it's distributed. But don't say it's fucking decentralized. It's polycentric. There are many, many, many centers to any given crypto network. It's almost like saying instead of one devil, you have 1,000 devils, and they all want a piece of the action. I did a test back in 2017, okay, because I couldn't afford to do too many, and you'll understand here in a moment. I simulated through a WordPress site a $20 purchase basically in value using Bitcoin, 20 bucks. Now, 20 bucks back then would have probably gotten you a decent enough meal with a drink, okay, at some restaurant. I don't mean a nice one, but some basic restaurant, you would have gotten yourself a meal and a drink for 20 bucks back in 2017. So if you think it's a trivial amount of money, it's not. For ordinary people, 20 bucks is even a lot of money right now. And that $20 never fucking arrived. It never got to its destination. We simulated the purchase from a wallet. We tried to track it. And all we found out is it got digitally coin clipped to nothing. So if you want to understand what this polycentric network is, it's a bunch of demons. You can be upset with the one big demon, Visa. At least they can clear transactions. But imagine having a million Visas and there is no phone number you can call. There isn't. I hate to break it to you, but with these fucking networks, you can't pick up the phone and say, you just fucked me. No. They can fuck you left and right. You are done. And finally, crypto's not decoupled. You know, they keep saying it's decoupled from the financial system. The problem is that it seems to have a very high correlation to financial phenomena. So when people say that, well, it's decoupled, Dan, you know, I'll tell you what, crypto, Bitcoin, Dogecoin, if, you know, as long as it's around, Ethereum, they will all become decoupled, I promise you, when the US dollar collapses. They will become decoupled when people recognize their true value is zero. And really, the opportunity cost means their true value is negative. It's less than zero. It's not just that there's no value there, but a whole bunch of windows were broken to create this crypto nonsense. I have a link in my notes to a podcast from a year ago. The title was The 1 Week Crack Up Bash. And the basic argument I made a year ago, and I have pretty much believed it's consistent since the beginning of the monkey herpes, is that they're going to keep all the plates spinning as long as they can. So if you ask me, the only way to know if crypto is going to rebound is if you think there's one more cycle of quantitative easing. If there is one more cycle, if Powell steps in and says, we're going to give people some juice at the end of the show, we're going to turn up the nitrous on that four banger, we're going to blow it out, baby, one last fucking time. You know, take the nitrous, hook it up to that shitty Toyota Corolla that has a million miles on it, and turn up the knob, baby, and see what happens. It could happen. Quantitative tightening, which has barely begun, and the interest rate hikes, which have barely done anything. I mean, if you compare it to what Volcker did back in the early 80s, it's been nothing, nothing. If you actually wanted to replicate Volcker, I've said you need to go to 15%. A friend of mine says you need to go to 23%. I promise you, at 5%, okay, at 500 basis points, at 5%, the system collapses. So they can't do it. And if you're saying, well, Dan, you mean they can print money? No, they really can't do that either. They can do it until the engine blows up. Okay? I mean, ultimately, if you want to understand the true value of crypto, ask yourself, at what point in the future is the US dollar going to fail? Because if you believe it can never fail, then I guess you can masturbate playing with crypto until the end of fucking time. But doesn't that mean, brothers and sisters, that crypto is not simply coupled, but deeply coupled to fiat? I think people get upset when I talk about crypto because they think I haven't given it a chance, and I have. One of the things I said in a podcast a month or so ago is that I have learned that the anarchist world, even more than the libertarian world is kind of, it's neutered, it's defanged, no one's afraid of those people taking all the dog catcher jobs. But the anarchist world proposes you don't need to vote and you can start changing today. And in that sense, it's way more dangerous than any of the political parties. So one of the things I've come to understand, which should have been intuitively obvious in 2016, but I've really experienced myself, is that the anarchist world is filled with people that are fakers, filled with feds, filled with informants, filled with people who want to like trick you into talking about something violent and dangerous. And I've met a few of these people. I've met one or two that want to talk you into doing something violent and dangerous, and they've kept their Twitter accounts for, I don't know, 10 plus fucking years. And good old Uncle Dan goes on for 15 seconds and he's banned forever. Isn't that fucking interesting, brothers and sisters? I've had one of these fools in the anarchist world periodically come to recognize that crypto is bullshit. And the only answer I get back at that point is, well, we gotta make money from this thing while we can. If you can. I mean, this particular person seemed to be broke all the time, so I don't know what kind of fucking money they were making, but if you can, right? What I guess I'm saying is, and this is one of the things that I just don't even know where to go with this. I think that as infiltrated with feds as the anarchist world is, the crypto world seems to be more infiltrated. And it's one of those things you just don't want to go to. Like, if you actually believe in freedom and you're trying to do things that involve counter-economics, don't use crypto, okay? There are other ways to complete a transaction outside the system, including basic bartering, and all of them can work. Don't use crypto. You know, use cash before crypto. At least with cash, an actual peer-to-peer transaction, which again, crypto's not peer-to-peer. If I need this polycentric network to be operating for me to be able to buy or sell, it is not peer-to-peer. $100 in cash is more peer-to-peer than crypto, brothers and sisters. So if you have to go buy a gun, buy some gold, buy whatever, you can take your wad of cash and you can still do that. Now, maybe they have tiny little microchips in the $20 bills. But honestly, brothers and sisters, once you get to that point, you're done. You're done. You can use physical gold and silver to trade with. You can use cash. You can use barter. There are so many other options that are actually peer-to-peer that operate better and more efficiently than crypto and don't involve digital coin clipping. Remember the 20 bucks that disappeared, the disappearing 20? That's my experience with crypto. Ordinary people who run coffee shops want transactions to clear. I've written one paper, one crypto paper. I wrote it in part because I think I was suckered into doing it. And you know what conclusion I came to in doing that research? If there is a space for crypto, it fits into the kind of regal economics. That's R-E-R-I-E-G-E-L. Regal was a writer, a thinker, who wrote on alternative banking. And in that world, the world where everyone becomes their own banker and has their own crypto, maybe it could work. But in general, it doesn't. It just doesn't seem to work. What is most important, okay, in terms of business? Like, value is critical. We should just assume as a baseline that at the end of the day, you want to generate value. But what is critical to your business on a daily basis? It's the ability to clear a transaction. If you can't clear a transaction, there is no fucking business. It's like choking to death. That's another good analogy for crypto. It's kind of like choking to death. Coffee shop owners, restaurant owners, ordinary people need transactions to clear. They do. They can't afford to wait days and weeks and months and years for a transaction to clear. They can't afford non-determinism. They are working on a cash basis. They have to be able to keep things going. And as far as the instability goes, you may think that's good on the way up. but on the way down, it really fucks a small business. So at the end of the day, ordinary businesses don't give a shit about your coins. They don't. What they give a shit about are the transactions. If anybody had cared about making crypto work, they would have made the transaction the king. And then whatever value it's associated with is a separate issue. The key is the transaction. What you want to replicate, what you want to authorize, what you want to verify is the transaction, not a bunch of masturbating albinos generating coins in some basement someplace. But with Bitcoin and crypto, the transactions, it's not just a second-class citizen, it's a third-class citizen. It's like, what? Transaction, it'll happen. Just wait for it. Just wait for it. It'll happen in a couple days, Dan. Oh, just wait for your transaction. It'll come through in a couple days, Dan. Or like with, you know, what Mashinsky says, maybe never, right? Today, no. If you needed your money, if you put money into whatever bullshit you put it into, and you have a Mashinsky-type person telling you you can't get to your money, then the actual value at that moment, whether you want to admit it or not, of your crypto is zero. It's nothing, okay? If you had an opportunity today to make a purchase, maybe it's a purchase that involves an arbitrage, so you're going to make some money. Maybe it's a purchase that might save your fucking life. It's a purchase of food. It's a purchase of property. It's a purchase of some technology that might save your fucking life. If you needed to do that today, you're done because your money is in one of these shitty fucking vaults of emptiness. It's in a furnace. So what's the value of Bitcoin? What's the value of Ethereum? What's the value of any of these cryptos? And the honest and true value is less than zero. It's negative. Which means if you have any money at all in any crypto, you should get out. And if your argument is, well, Dan, if I don't stay in, I won't make my money back, my response is really quite simple, okay? Any value greater than zero is more than zero. So if it currently is greater than zero, you should get out. If you can get 20 grand after going through all that bullshit, because right now, let's say Bitcoin's at 27,000, plus or minus. If today a whole bunch of people were to head for the door to get their 20-some thousand dollars in value, by the time you reach the exit, it might only be 10,000. When Bitcoin gets to 10,000, this is really critical. If people rush for the door, the next price target will be zero. And a lot of you motherfuckers will never, ever, ever get your fucking money out. So if you have a few $100, a few $1,000, if you just have so many Satoshis that it might pay for a month's rent, any amount of money you can get today is worth more than zero. That's assuming you can withdraw. That's assuming you can get out. What did my crypto friends tell me over and over and over again? You'll be able to control it. You'll be able to master it. You won't be manipulated. You won't be stopped. There won't be any of these, you know, cash controls, capital controls. You'll be able to get out. That's what they kept saying for 10 fucking years. I knew it was bullshit then, and I know it's even more bullshit now. But I am sure there are little creepy cultists out there who still fucking believe that nonsense. Fine, I don't care. Lose your fucking money. What I ask is for any Christian listening, if you're involved with crypto, get out and stop telling people to go in. Just get out, okay? If you lost money, then I'll say God bless because you were taught a lesson, now get out. If you made money and you even still made it today after you get out, I would suggest doing something good with some of that money because a lot of people's lives were hurt and harmed and destroyed and impacted by that stupid fucking money, by that money, by that wealth you think you just accrued. Next topic. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. It's always darkest before it gets even darker. That's right, it's always darkest before it gets even darker. It's always darkest before it gets even worse, baby. I think there's a desire that is maybe not rational, but it's understandable to believe that, you know, you've reached bottom, that this is the bottom, this is as bad as it gets. The problem is it's usually a fallacy based upon your experience. Like from your perspective, I grew up in America, post-World War II, blah, blah, blah. If you're a boomer today, okay, if you were a boomer today, and you were born roughly around the time that World War II ended, plus or minus, you have lived through one of the most spectacular periods of wealth aggregation in human history. And maybe from your perspective, normal looks like that. It might. And there are people in the X generation, okay, like myself, who look back upon the time between the 70s and today, and they would say, well, the 90s were okay, the 80s were kind of okay, and, you know, the 80s and the 90s were kind of okay. But the reality is, X generation people saw the decay. We saw things falling apart. We remember when our parents first bought the Velveeta instead of the cheese. We remember when our parents started using that little plastic rectangle. We remember all of that. We remember the beginnings of globalism as it was described and what it became. And there were many of us critical of globalism back then. And we were told we were fools. What do you mean, Dan? Won't it be better if everybody trades with everybody? Well, in a free world, yeah. But when it's the government controlling it, it's not what you think it is. It's Stalinism. That's what that is. You think it's globalism, but it's really just like good old Joseph Stalin having old whole cities that would do one fucking thing. This is Tractor City. This is TV City. This is Circuit City. That was globalism. That was Stalinism. That was a means of control. Okay? You can say it was about weakening America. Maybe it was also more about trying to keep the show going until the last minute. I mean, you look at every grift that the deep state has done since the year 1970, it's one scam after another. The petrodollar scam, the China inflation dump scam, the easy credit scam, the Fannie Freddie bullshit, the expansion of student loans. All of these things were designed to keep party going until when? And so if you're a boomer today and you're looking around and saying, oh, it seems like it's the 1970s. I met a boomer a year ago who was trying to gaslight me into believing it was the 1970s. He was a fucking retard. This is not the 1970s, brothers and sisters. Not even remotely close to that. It's not the 1930s. In the 1930s, one barrel of oil still got you about 70 barrels. Today, one barrel maybe gets you two. Maybe. That's reality. And if you look at the tar sands in Canada, they use up way more energy in than they get out. That's the way the Germans made oil at the end of the war, brothers and sisters. Okay? We are manufacturing oil in our economy today, producing it the way the Nazis did at the end of the war. In essence, in a non-economic way. How the fuck is that a good sign? But a boomer will tell you, oh, damn, it'll be like the 70s. It'll be a little bad. We'll have some stagflation. But I read a story about a robot, and the robots will clean my butt. The robots will stick a tube into my splanctus. They'll drain me of my grogan juice. They'll feed it to pigs. They'll feed it to pigs, baby. And then everyone will get bacon, Dan. Everyone gets bacon. Yeah, I had a boomer a year ago telling me it was going to be like the 70s, and he was so proud of his prediction. No, he should have been proud of his wishful thinking. A lot of fucking wishful thinking. Okay? I know it would be better for me to say, it's all over. The good times are here again. It's all finished. But what you've seen so far is the orchestra tuning up. What you've heard and seen so far is that moment before the show begins, okay? This is not the show, okay? The monkey herpes COVID was not the show. The race war was not the show. The Biden-Trump bullshit was not the program. The program hasn't even begun yet. And you can sense it, though, can't you? That weird electricity in the air, the apprehension, the hesitation. You can feel it if you put down your fucking smart device for a second. Like Dr. Freckles said, it's always darkest before it gets even darker. And I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I know that I started raising the alarm in a serious way in 2019. I basically told people, based on my experience, what I thought was happening, what I thought was going to happen. And so, unlike a lot of motherfuckers who don't get deeply shadow banned, I didn't spend every year for the last 10 years saying, it's going to happen now. In 2015 and 2016, you know what I said? I said it was 5 fucking years away. 5 years, plus or minus. I actually put that into an essay. It's a matter of public record. So I don't have to be some asshole who's been telling you the world's going to end for 10 fucking years. In 2019, I told you things were going to start tipping over. And what I have been certain about since 2020 is that this government and every government on the planet has used every kind of fear, every kind of manipulation, every kind of bullshit to basically keep people confused and distracted and under control. You know, at first I called it Snow Day because, you know, I figured Snow Day can't last that long. It can't last for more than 90 days. I really didn't see it doing that. But they have a augmented Snow Day that's been going on for more than 2 years. And it's kind of amazing. You sort of have to respect it in a way when it comes to grifts, when it comes to cons, when it comes to military psychological warfare, you do have to tip your hat and say, holy fuck. They have managed to maintain control over billions of fucking people for almost 2 years, to mostly keep them under control, at home, not talking to each other, to mostly keep them focused on bullshit, extraneous nonsense, and irrelevance, to keep them focused on the wrong fucking thing. It has been the biggest table of three-card Monty in the history of the world. And they've done it. They kept people confused. Not everybody, but you don't have to keep everybody confused. You just have to keep enough people confused. And I still have people who will email me, well, Dan, who should I vote for in 2022? Who should I vote for in 20? You know what? If you're still thinking about voting, I'm going to tell you what I told people in 2020. If you're still thinking about voting, you are solving problems from 2019. You are solving problems that even if they were problems, they are in your rearview mirror. And I don't think they ever were. If you're focused on voting, you are doomed. You should focus on trying to find a place for you and the people you love that is away from a major city. Okay? Not downwind from a boiling water nuclear reactor. You should try to find yourself that is a place to live that is at least 50 miles from every major highway and ideally has geographic isolation. Okay, but also has resources like water. You're going to need water. You're going to need food. You're going to need shelter. You should do that. You should find yourself a place to live, in my opinion, and this isn't about climate change. You should find yourself a place to live that's at least 200 feet above sea level. Because even though I'm not a big fan of the climate change bullshit, I do think there's some fucked up shit happening in the world's ecosystems. And I don't know where that's headed, but if you believe what you're fucking told, for most of Earth's history, we've been a lot warmer. And the levels of the oceans have been higher. So if you're simply betting on the fucking averages, the reversion to the mean, if that's all you're fucking betting on, if you want to find yourself a place, make sure it's at least 200 feet above sea level. That's way more relevant than trying to ask, when are we going to get to the bottom, Dan, so I can start buying Bitcoin again? I mean, you can buy a lot of Bitcoin when it gets to zero. When it gets to zero, you can set up your solar panels. And you can mine it by yourself in the woods someplace. You can wait for the coyote people, covered in monkey sweat. You can wait for the eagle to stare down upon you. You can wait for the old Native American chief to give you that leaf. Or that shroom. You can do all that. You can keep mining your Bitcoin. What I would tell all of you, though, is it's simply going to become a fetish at some point for a brief amount of time. That's when while the electricity still functions. Or you can simply power your own little node in your own little home producing, you know, coins that no one can ever use. That is all feasible. You could just sit there in the woods someplace mining coins. I don't really fucking care. I don't. You've been warned. Okay? A lot of people want to create analogies for this that don't apply. Well, it's going to be like the 70s. It's going to be like the 30s. It's going to be like the early 18th century. I had a motherfucker who wanted to tell me this was like the Mississippi bubble. I mean, if the Mississippi bubble involved the entire planet in the 18th century and about 200 other planets, then okay, maybe. But the reality is, that's nothing compared to what's coming. Nothing. If you're really, really lucky, the best book I can recommend, I'll recommend two books I've recommended before. One is A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman. That's so you psychologically don't fucking lose it. And the other is The Medieval Machine by Jean Gimpel. Those are two books I'd recommend to read as soon as possible. They're not long reads. You'll read A Distant Mirror so you don't lose it. So you understand that even though things can get hard, it's not necessarily the end of the world. And you read The Medieval Machine by Jean Gimpel to understand that when these empires collapse, creativity does not end. In fact, one could argue that creativity becomes unleashed. If you can liberate yourself from control, if you can liberate yourself from your fetish of voting, if you can liberate yourself from your desire to solve problems with threats, then what's about to happen could also be fucking amazing in a good way. But the reality is, folks, it's not going to be the 1970s, okay? If we're lucky, what we're about to go through is the kind of thing that human civilization goes through once or twice every 1,000 years. If we're lucky, it's a 1,000-year event. If we're unlucky, it's a 10,000-year event. And if we're really, really unlucky, yeah, it's over. But I would say if we're lucky, if this is just the collapse of the dollar empire, still going to be really bad, way worse than the Mississippi bubble. If we're really lucky, okay, you know, things will break down. The United States government will stop being able to exert any authority. I kind of like that personally, but I know there are a lot of fearful boomers out there. So, oh my God, I won't get my, no, you won't be getting your Social Security check, and that's if you're really fucking lucky. if you're really, really lucky. If we won the lottery of history after all the dumb shit of the last couple hundred years, if we won that lottery of history and we're really fucking lucky, then yeah, you better give up on your fucking pensions and shit. If you're a fucking optimist, you should have begun buying physical silver and gold, which have both been at a discount. You should have started doing that 5-6 years ago. Okay? If you're a fucking optimist, you should be stacking gold, stacking silver, stacking ammo, stacking long-term storable food, and you should learn how to purify water and have water on hand if you're an optimist. If you're a pessimist, it just doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Okay? You know? When I said that, okay, right now, we could be at the point with Bitcoin where if the bag holders were to start leaving en masse, like just start leaving, it's possible that if they all started leaving today, a lot of them would never get their money. That is how volatile and unstable these crypto markets are. And again, some motherfucker might say, well, I'm shutting it down to protect you. But that just means that your crypto went to zero faster. It really does. I think that it's foolish to believe these motherfuckers are protecting you. They're protecting themselves. Wait until they sell their fucking car and their third fucking home. Wait until they give up on their cocaine hookers and have them give them the speech about how they're protecting you. That's a load of shit. You and I both know that. You think it's dark today? You're wrong. You can still go to the grocery store and get food. You think it's dark today? You're wrong. The internet's still working, fucker. You think it's dark today? You can still order pizza. Get tumors in your colon. You think it's dark today? You haven't seen nothing yet, baby. If you own a home in a major city and your home has appreciated in value, and you can sell your home today and get more value out, okay, than you put in, you should do it today. You should have done it yesterday. Just like with crypto, there's going to come a point in the future where so many people are going to want to exit that you will not be able to exit. If you think there's tons and tons of rich people in India and China and Mexico and Germany and Denmark who are going to come and buy your fucking home, you're a fucking crazy person. If you think there's a bunch of rich people in this country, or rather ordinary people, average people, most people, if you think most people in this country have money hidden someplace that they're going to pull together to buy your $1 million bungalow, your 500 square foot hellhole in the city, you're a fucking fool. If you can sell your fucking home in the city, you need to do it today. You should have done it yesterday, but there's going to come a point in the near future where you won't be able to do it. Either too many people will be exiting at the same time, or some government motherfucker like Majinsky, he's not government, but boy, see how crypto acts like it. Some motherfucker from some local county or city will say, you can't. You can't. You can't. You can't sell your home. You can't do it. You can't put it on the market. You're not allowed to. Why would they do that? For the same reason why they would do price controls. At some point in the future, you will not be able to exit that quote-unquote investment, just like with crypto. If you want to believe that the turnaround is almost here, that there's a silver fucking lining, fine. You know, most of human history has been quite fucking brutal. If you were lucky enough to be born post-World War II and to live through the meaty parts of that time period, then you might think everything is fucking pie in the sky, but it's not. And a lot of people, especially in the United States, are about to get a rude awakening. You think it's dark today? Brothers and sisters, I can still drink coffee and podcast. It is not dark yet. You want to know what dark looks like? Wait for the first blackout that lasts more than a month. Wait for the first blackout that coincides with the water not being delivered. That's going to be fun if you live in a city in the Southwest. Wait for the first blackout that lasts a month and there's no water and there's no food. And then tell me about that it's never darkest before the dawn. I can tell you, as Dr. Freckles once said, it is never darkest before it gets darker. Or it's always darkest before it gets even darker. If you like this podcast and you want to donate money, cash out your crypto today, go to PayPal. It is the only sleazy way I have of getting sleazy money on the Death Star. And even though I've recommended using physical cash to do actual peer-to-peer transactions, that doesn't mean I think fiat currency is good. It just means it still works. It still works more or less as advertised. Okay, on the Death Star, the Vader bucks still work. The crypto doesn't. Okay, it's not a question of right or wrong. The crypto shit does not work, is not going to fucking help you. The world that is coming is not a world where you can use Bitcoin. Okay, it's not the reset, it's not one world government. The world that's coming is going to be very, very brutal. And people are going to fucking kill you if you offer to pay them in crypto. There will be people out there in the world that's coming that if you mention crypto, they'll slit your fucking throat. Okay? So my advice is, if you like this podcast, to cash out your fucking crypto and send me some PayPal. If you already have, God bless. You don't need to send any more. But please donate, you know, because it's never darkest until it gets darker, right? And have a great Monday.